Welcome, everyone, to episode 257 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about DeMarcus Cousins' ACL tear and what it means for the Los Angeles Lakers. Then we're going to get into the Eastern Conference over-unders, making our pick for every Eastern Conference team. Before we get to all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Well, I'm excited, Brian, because apparently y'all are buying Greenland. So I'm just waiting for that big check to clear so all us Danes can just, you know, spread our wealth around.
Of course, yeah. It's going to go really well. I'm sure it's not a harebrained scheme at all.
I mean, I'm just up for all the money. You're already ruining the plan as is. Like, why not? Let's just accelerate that thing and then all die at the same time in, like, 2035.
Yeah, well, at least you get to live large for the next 10 years before the coming apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of apocalypses, Mort, we need to start with the DeMarcus Cousins news because, unfortunately, this week, I believe it was Thursday, that first Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted that he had just suffered a possible knee injury while working out in Las Vegas on Monday. And then shortly thereafter, Shams Charania of The Athletic confirmed the worst. He has a torn ACL. He is just based on the timeline to recover from that type of an injury, he is likely to miss most, if not all, of the 2019-2020 season. And unfortunately, this is now the third major lower body injury he's had. You know, he tore the Achilles in January 2018. He had the quad tear during the playoffs, early in the playoffs this year, and now the ACL a couple months later. So, I don't think there's that much to say about Boogie in particular, other than this sucks. I hope he gets well. I hope he, like, finally just gets over all of these injuries and resumes his career. Yeah. And has, you know, a productive second act, because he's still young. I mean, he's only 29. He's still got time. It's not like, you know, hopefully this is not the last we've seen of Boogie Cousins. But at this point, it's just like, man, I feel so bad for the guy.
Yeah, it's so tough. I have to assume that he comes back, of course. And thankfully for him, his game doesn't rely on, you know, elite athleticism.
Right.
He's still a big, burly guy. But I would like to see him take, like, the Tim Duncan approach. Like, Tim really slimmed down. He lost, like, 20 pounds going into, like, his last three seasons, I want to say, with the Spurs before retiring, which just kind of gave him that little bit of energy boost and a little bit more of a speed advantage.
Sure.
So maybe just losing some weight to not put so much pressure on the joints and just kind of think of the longevity of it. Like, he's still going to be strong as hell. I mean, that even if he slims down, like, that upper body strength is not going to go away. Like, he's still a house of a human being.
Yep.
And he can still shoot. I still think that attribute to his game and the fact that he's a really good passer, and we really don't talk enough about his passing, that just makes me think he can survive at least offensively. Defensively, oh boy, that's a whole different story, though.
Yeah, and that's always been the question with him, so not much changes in that regard. But, you know, we'll have plenty of time to speculate about what he's going to look like when he comes back. Let's first just get him back to that starting line. So best wishes to Cousins, and hope everything goes well in the recovery. Unfortunately, we also have to talk about what it means for the Lakers, because now they are down one center. They still have JaVale McGee on the roster, and they still have Anthony Davis, who has famously said he does not want to play center. And during his introductory press conference, he said, like, I'm not even going to sugarcoat it anymore. I like playing the four. I want to play the four. Then he turned to Frank Vogel, and he's like, but if you need me to, coach, I'll play the five. Only if you need me to. And then Rob Pelinka, during that same press conference, said, look, you know, this is about the next 10 years of Anthony Davis. We expect him to be a Laker for a long time. It's for the best that we limit his minutes to five. We have JaVale. We have DeMarcus. They're going to soak up a lot of those minutes. Well, now you don't have DeMarcus. So you still have JaVale. You still have Davis if he's willing to play the five. And now Shams Charania reported this morning that there is mutual interest between the Lakers and Dwight Howard, who famously had his one season there in 2012-2013. He is currently still a member of the Memphis Grizzlies. They have yet to waive him, but they are fully expected to do so. Or maybe they'll trade him to the Lakers. Who knows? So that's a possibility. But more, what would you like to see the Lakers do in the wake of this injury? Do you think Howard is the answer? Do you think they should go after another free agent? Or should they just tell Anthony Davis, suck it up and play the five for 20 minutes a game?
A part of everything, really. I think Davis should play more of the five. You can't really, even if you signed Dwight, you just don't know what kind of player he is at this point, and he's not a shooter. He still doesn't defend greatly in space. I mean, he's best near the rim, both offensively and defensively. So I have to assume that even if he's in the rotation, along with JaVale, like, they're not going to soak up 48 minutes at the center spot. So Davis will have to probably play a little bit there regardless. I don't even really have like a good hold of who's like out there on the market anymore in you know, the middle of August.
Yeah,
like, Dwight theoretically, not just because of he's a big name, but like he's probably one of the upper like class centers available, right?
It's very bleak out there. I mean, you still have Joakim Noah is the other guy.
Oh, right.
Who's actually, you know, if it's between Dwight and Noah, I would actually prefer Noah.
Yeah, I too. Yeah.
Just because we saw him with the Grizzlies, you know, he had the Knicks tenure and it was a disaster from the start. But this past season, you know, the Knicks waived him in October. He signs with the Grizzlies in December. He actually looked good in limited minutes against the Grizzlies. You don't want to rely on him as a 35-minute-a-game starter anymore. That's not who he is. But, you know, he proved that he could soak up backup center minutes, 20 minutes a game, somewhere around there, which is all you're asking out of him if you're the Lakers. Whereas Dwight, now we've seen, you know, how many teams has he been on in the past 5-6 years? Like, he wears out his welcome so quickly. We haven't necessarily seen him fit in well in more of a complimentary role. And, yeah. I mean, just given the health issues with him, you know, he missed, what, I think all but 9 games last year. So, you know, you already took one gamble on DeMarcus, who is also coming off of some major injuries over the past few years. If you're really adamant about not playing Anthony Davis at center during the regular season all that much, I don't know that gambling on Dwight Howard to stay healthy is necessarily the right play.
But is it legal for Noah to join the Lakers when he said they're Hollywood as hell about LeBron, who's now in Hollywood?
Right. I mean, that would be the funny storyline is, like, does Joakim Noah just say, like, no, man, I'm not teaming up with LeBron. I don't care. no way. Yeah, I mean, aside from Noah, you have Kenneth Faried still out there. And then Mozgov. I think he's signed to a European team, perhaps, but
yeah, I think he did. Yeah. I mean, Fareed would actually be kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't hate that. Who else? Tyler Zeller's still out there.
Ooh, no.
Gortat, I believe.
So you're saying Zeller and Dirt?
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm telling you, it's bad. It's very grim. There's not a great, I mean, you know, it's the middle of August. Of course, there's not a great option here.
How many roster spots do they have available?
One. So that's the other tricky part. Because in theory, they're saving one for Andre Iguodala if and when he gets bought out.
Yeah.
So do you keep Dwight, or sorry, do you keep DeMarcus on the roster and hope he can get back by the playoffs, or do you waive him and open up a roster spot?
Yeah, yep, sorry, but yeah, you probably do, right? He signed for 1 year. He's probably not going to play.
Right. I mean, that's possible. I mean, you have Amir Johnson's out there too, Zaza Pachulia, Salah Mejri.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you know what? You're right. Noah, if he's keen.
Yeah, I think Noah's the best bet. And then, really, Anthony Davis, once the playoffs come around, he's going to need to play the five. That's their only chance of going on a deep run at this point.
Yep.
So, I mean, you have JaVale. I mean, like, ideally, this could open up their best starting five. Like, depending on how willing he is to play the five, if they were going to force Cousins into the starting lineup or force McGee into the starting lineup, that means Kuzma was probably not going to start because you're going to have this LeBron at point guard, Danny Green at the two. You know, if you were starting Kuzma and Cousins, who's guarding point guards? Who's guarding anyone in the backcourt? You have Danny Green, of course, but, you know.
Yeah, that's one guy. Yeah.
Right. Banking on LeBron to guard a backcourt member during the regular season, he's capable of doing it, but is he going
to
put forth
to.
Right, is he going to put forth that effort? I don't know. So
no.
Yeah, it's a sneaky big injury for the Lakers for these reasons. It just kind of, you know, they with Cousins, they could have done a LeBron, Davis, Cousins all on the floor together and just gone bully ball. Like gone the complete opposite direction of what the Warriors did the last few years and what a lot of teams have done is go smaller. And then, you know, you've got Milwaukee and Philly in the East, both of whom also went in the complete opposite direction and are going to have gigantic lineups this season. The Lakers would have had a nice counter to that, and now that takes one tool out of their toolbox. They're not totally screwed here, but this is a sneaky big injury for them.
Yeah, it removes a lot of shooting for them as well.
Yeah.
Like, Noah's not going to replicate that. Fareed is not going to replicate that. Dwight isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... Maybe you should just look at a wing.
And then just tell Anthony Davis to suck it up.
Yeah.
I mean, like, because you're not... There aren't that many bruising bigs left in the NBA.
Right.
That's... I mean, his resistance to playing the five makes sense if you're going to bang against, you know, burly, like, 280-pound guys every night. But now you're seeing more stretch fives, more Brook Lopez types who aren't going to work you in the post repeatedly. So,
like, Jamichael Green plays center here and there.
Right, like, right. Yeah.
Hey, Frank, I don't want to go up against Jamichael Green. Oh, right, no.
Right.
Think of the longevity. Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I get him wanting to reduce the wear and tear on his body, but he's going to have to play center more than he wants to.
Well, I mean, that depends, though. So many centers in today's game are more or less garbage men, right? They're not really the focal point anymore.
Right.
So
right.
What are you guarding, really? If that's a defensive-inclined center, what are you guarding?
I think it's more just having to box out, fight for rebounds, than the offensive concern.
But, like, you have to do that anyway. Right. And there are some serious, like, seriously strong fours who's got great noses for rebounding. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I think this whole idea for, you know, we've seen it over the past 10 years, like, players saying, oh, I want to play the four, I want to play the five. It's just an outdated concept, man.
Right, right. Well, I wrote about this at the B-ball writer, or the basketball writers, bballwriters.com. You can use the code the NBA pod for 10% off your daily, monthly, or annual subscription. So check that piece out. I also, I'm having a piece go up either today or tomorrow where I wrote nice things about the Portland Trailblazers to atone for the last 3 years where I've been skeptical about them. I snuck in some Anthony Simons praise for you, Mort.
I appreciate that very, very much.
I'm buying the hype. It's not just you hyping him now.
I'm glad. I'm glad you joined the bandwagon.
Yep.
Way too late, but you were joining it.
Yeah, hey, you didn't do anything last year?
Doesn't matter.
I know. Alright, let's switch to over-unders now. We did the West last episode, so we're going to start with the East this time. Mm-hmm. And much like last episode, we're just going to go from the highest win total to the lowest, and then we will make our pick either over or under. The Bucks have the highest win total, projected win total, in the NBA at 57.5. They went 60-22 last year. Did lose Malcolm Brogdon this summer, but they added Wes Matthews, Robin Lopez, Kyle Korver. Where you stand on the Bucks?
Oh, I think this is like a good line because, you know, for a team that did so well, it's not uncommon for you know, to take a step back the following season.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, the intensity of, you know, being the league's best team, at least in the regular season, all that, can take a lot away from you. So maybe the Bucks just don't prioritize the regular season as much this year. Like, who mm-hmm. knows? I do think the Malcolm Brogdon loss is significant, but like we talked about, you know, Wesley Matthews will come in and take at least some responsibility in terms of the shooting department, but what they won't get from him is the ball handling, the defense, right, the playmaking. So, is that worth like 2.5 losses? Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. So it depends on Giannis. Mm-hmm. Like, if his theory about him only being 60% a finished product rings true, then no, then this is definitely way too low. But we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bucks finish with at least less than 60 wins. If it's under 57, not sure. I could see it go either way. It's not a ridiculous line.
No, definitely not. I mean, I lean under, but like you, I don't feel super great about that. Because, yeah, I mean, the Brogdon loss is big. Nico, whatever. I mean, he played 14 games for them. I don't think that's a huge loss at all, in fact. I mean, they lost Tony Snell as well, but, you know, he only averaged 17.6 minutes a game for them last season. I'm not sweating that too much. They were pretty lucky in terms of health last year. Four guys started at least 70 games for them. Brogdon started 64. So, you know, it comes down to, if Giannis gets hurt for any length of time, they're definitely going under. Hopefully he does not, but, you know, or Bledsoe, who he played 78 last year, but he had some injury troubles earlier in his career. Brook Lopez played 81 last year. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if he missed a couple more this year. So, yeah, I mean, I think like 56, 57 is probably where they end up, which is still probably going to be a top two record in the East, but it does go under. So I'm going to take the slight under for the Milwaukee Bucks. The Philadelphia 76ers are next on the list at 56.5, second highest in the NBA. Where are you going, the Sixers, Mort?
I have no idea because, look, they just changed their team so dramatically. Like, Al Horford, who's, you know, going back to the whole center concept, like, he was a guy who was just this focal point, both offensively and defensively. And now he is going to play in this very, very big lineup with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. And I really don't know what's going to happen. Is he going to get as many elbow touches? Is he going to be more of a perimeter threat? Like, how is that going to look like? I have absolutely no idea. The only thing I do know, which I think is pretty obvious, is that, you know, Josh Richardson is going to run around screens and get a lot of catch and shoot jump shot opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a strong enough shooter to really connect on that. I don't think like being the number one option for so long in Miami was necessarily great for him.
Yeah.
In terms of his efficiency, at least.
Yep.
Him being what, the third or fourth option here. That's just a different scenario. And I think he could really cash in on that. So I really have no clue. I mean, I got to see this team to really believe it and understand what the hell they're doing. I mean, I like all their players on paper, and now I just want to see how it all fits together. So I'm backing my ass out of this one. No idea. No clue.
You're more of a coward than Ben Simmons.
Yes, I am. I openly admit that I'm a bigger coward than Ben Simmons on this one. Absolutely.
I mean, I'll give you this. This is a really tough line for the reasons you just laid out. They completely overhauled their starting five. We have no idea how those guys are going to fit together. My gut tells me the under, just because I think it's going to take them a little bit of time before they really take off. But they gave themselves some really nice Embiid insurance with Horford and with Kylo Quinn, who I'm going to pound the table for his name all offseason, because their backup center situation was such a disaster last year that whenever Embiid stepped off the floor, they just got blown out more often than not. Especially in the playoffs. Kylo Quinn is competent. He is their third string center right now. I think he would have been their best backup center last year. And by a healthy margin.
Boban and pretty obvious.
Greg Monroe and Amir Johnson. Like, none of the, you know, Boban had his moments, and I love the guy to death. I think he's, you know, one of the nicest guys in the NBA, but There were matchups where he was just completely lost and had no chance. I don't think you're going to see that for Kylo Quinn. So I think I'm taking the under here because I think Embiid's going to get load managed to an extent that we haven't seen before. And that's good. That's what they should do. That's, you know, you don't go out and spend most of your cap space on Al Horford if you aren't expecting to use him as your starting center for 20-plus games while you're getting Embiid rest during the regular season. Because they've, you know, Elton Brand said it during the press conference for Horford and all the other free agent signings. He said, like, our goal is to get a healthy Joel Embiid to the playoffs. We haven't done that the last couple seasons. We need to do that this year. Does that mean we need to manage his minutes? Yes. Does it mean we need to manage his games? Yes. And Embiid came out during his exit interviews and said, I need to be smarter. I looked at what the Raptors did with Kawhi. I want to do something along those lines. I felt guilty this past year because I felt like we didn't have anyone to take my minutes and perform well. Well, now they have Al Horford and Kyle Oakwood. So I think we'll talk about awards races in the coming months as well. Like, I wouldn't pick Embiid for MVP for that reason. I think he's going to play around 60 games, maybe 30 minutes a game. And I think they're going to keep their eye strictly on the playoffs this year. I don't think they're going to try as hard as they necessarily can. You know, they're not going to push Embiid to play 75 games so they get the number one seed in the East. I don't think they care.
That all makes perfect sense. And my gut tells me the under. But here's the thing. I don't want to look dumb because this is going to be the third active season for Ben Simmons.
Right.
Tobias Harris is going to come back with a vengeance because he is definitely a lot better than what he showed during his Philly tenure from last season.
Yeah.
And Josh Richardson. Yeah. And Josh Richardson, as I alluded to previously, in terms of his shooting ability and the open shots that he's going to take, and Al Horford just stepping in that center role when Embiid is out, like, there is definitely a world wherein Embiid, you know, is load managed 22 games, and they still win 60+.
Yeah, like, for sure.
That possibility exists, and I can sit here and go, well, maybe they win 52, and then they spank my ass by winning 65.
Yeah. No, I mean,
I have no idea where they're going.
They should have a top five defense this year. Like, something went wrong, horribly wrong, if they don't have a top five defense, just based on their personnel, based on their size. And you're right, that should carry them through a lot of games. And, you know, we talked about load management a bunch in the West. We'll talk about it here in the East as well. But one of the prevailing themes in the East is you get to play a higher number of games against crappy teams. So you're going to have more, should be, gimme games. Now, you know, some of those are trap games because you don't get up to play the Cleveland Cavaliers and then Colin Sexton goes off for 35 because you weren't prepared. Who knows? That's, you know, they're going to lose a couple of these games against bad teams because that's what they always do. But in theory, they have a bunch of very easy games. I wrote something at Forbes about their early season schedule. I mean, it's really set up nicely for them to get off to a very hot start. They have a tricky four-game road trip in, like, the third week of the season. It's going to take some air out of the balloon. But after that, they play, like, you know, basically 3 weeks against mostly Eastern Conference bottom feeders. So I think it's going to take them some time to get adjusted to one another. But the schedule really helps in that regard. It should give them that leeway without having to push Embiid too hard too early.
Or maybe they just come out running because Al Horford is a genius.
Yeah, it's totally possible. I hope I'm wrong. I would love them to win 60 games. But, you know, I'm going to pessimistically take the under and pray that I'm wrong. The Celtics are third in the East with an over-under of 50. They won 49 last year, 49-33. So they're banking on... I guess Vegas is banking on Kyrie's gone. They don't hate each other anymore. They'll actually win one more game because of it.
If you're a pessimist, you go the whole route of Jason Tatum is overrated. He's not going to, you know, be the player everyone thought he would be. Kemba Walker is a downgrade from Kyrie in terms of talent, yada, yada, yada. But you know what? I'm not buying that. So Kemba, as we talked about, yeah, from a player's perspective in terms of raw talent, downgrade. Mm-hmm. But locker room presence, leadership abilities, severe upgrade. And I mean, he's a much better player to just finagle all those chemistry issues if there ever were one. You have Gordon Hayward coming back. He just spent a whole year trying to get reacclimated to the league. I have to assume he's going to look better. Yeah. And I think with Kyrie, yes, the Hero Ball aspect now being gone, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Jason Tatum kind of just get the ball in his hands a little bit more and hopefully just not Kobe it up as much as he did last year. I think the Celtics spoke to him. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they sat him down and went, you know what? you went Kobe on us. That's not going to fly. Like, that's not your game. I mean, look at what you did in your rookie season. You were a fantastic shooter. You just had to play within yourself. And also, we just continuously seem to forget about Jaylen Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's going to go into what his fourth season. the contract year. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge presence as well. So you lose Al Horford. That's the biggest loss they could have had, in my opinion.
Yep, totally agree.
You don't really have anyone to take his minutes and do what he could do. Like, Enes Kanter is going to come in and average like 15 and 12, and that's fine and well, but he's not going to be a guy who can just kind of orchestrate the entire offense and play make and shoot the three and all this. So that's the biggest question mark. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's not about the whole Kyrie versus Kemba thing, at least in terms of playing ability. It's more so how do you look at what Al Horford gave you and try to somewhat mimic that for someone else. You can't really do that. So that responsibility has to be put on the perimeter guys way more. Now, are they up to it? That's the big question. I'm going to be positive. I'm going to say it's either a push or slightly over.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm going under, if only because of the downgrade from Horford to Kanter. And also, if you look at their depth chart, their starting five is great. You still have Marcus Smart off the bench. But other than that, you're relying on a lot of really young, unproven guys.
Yeah,
I'm high on Grant Williams moving forward, Carson Edwards moving forward, Romeo Langford moving forward. But am I high on them this year being a contributor to a 50-plus win team? No, I think they're going to take their rookie lumps. So,
Carson Edwards might not.
That's true. I mean, because his role is just going to be a microwave scorer off the bench.
Exactly, and he's also very NBA-ready in terms of age and, his outlook. Like, he's one of those guys who's going to come in and just kind of do his things right off the bat.
Yeah. I mean, I think Boston's still going to be good, but I think they're more in, like, the 46, 47, maybe even 48 win range. 50 feels too high to me.
Could absolutely happen. Yeah.
Next on the list, the Indiana Pacers at 47. Mm-hmm. They went 48-34 last year. We don't know about Victor Oladipo. He's going to be out who knows how long at the start of the season to recover from the quad injury. But they did pick up Malcolm Brogdon. They did pick up TJ Warren. They do have some, they lost a bunch of guys. They lost four of their five starters. So it's basically a whole new team. Oh, they got Jeremy Lamb too. So, they had a seismic offseason in terms of changes. What do you think about the Pacers?
So I brought up the Pacers a couple months back and told you that I thought they could potentially enter themselves into like the top four race in the East.
Mm-hmm.
And from looking at Vegas, they're a top four team right now. And I mean, when you look at it that way, I love what they did. They're now heavy on the wings and the guard spots. And that's where a lot of playmaking goes on. If Oladipo comes back somewhat early, like, who knows? That's still up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, when he comes back, you have so much help there now at the wing position that you don't have to rush him back.
Yeah.
Like, he can come back, he can take his time, and he can kind of figure out, oh, okay, so I'll start up slow, like, play 25 minutes here and there, take a couple games off if I'm feeling rusty. Malcolm Brogdon's got it, Jeremy Lamb is there. There's just so the offense could go through demands as a bonus. Like, Miles Turner is still there. I mean, I've been crabbing on Turner for a while simply because I want more out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I've decided that I want to be positive about him for this year. I think this is the year. Bigs take longer to really get that whole groove set. This is the year.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big question hanging over them right now, other than when Oladipo comes back. Can Sabonis and Turner coexist?
Yeah,
I think so too. But if they can't, Sabonis, I believe, is up for an extension this year or will be a restricted free agent next summer. Like, it's put up or shut up time for that duo.
Yeah, I really don't think it's that big of an issue. I get that Sabonis doesn't move all that well defensively, and defensively he will have some issues. But the offensive potential there, combined with the fact that Miles Turner is a great defender, especially off the weak side, and as a shot blocker who will take a lot of shots at the rim, I think we are so quick to immediately go to the mindset of, oh, bad defense, that means automatically they can't be successful. Well, I mean, James Harden is not a great defender. He just overwhelms you with great offense all the time.
Right.
I think that that duo of Sabonis and Turner, you know, have the potential of at least overwhelming you offensively to the point where you look at the defense, you go, oh, yeah, it's bad. But, I mean, look at what they gave us offensively. Like, we'll take it. It just outweighs what they give up. I think that's the scenario that you have to look at. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if they find a really good rhythm. And now that you have Jeremy Lamb, who isn't necessarily ball dominant, but can shoot and can move off the ball, he's going to provide so many passing opportunities for Sabonis, who's a great passer, just for interior, on the exterior. Like, he can pass everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think Sabonis can be kind of a homeless version of Al Horford offensively, just from inside the three-point arc.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also... So you're taking me over here, it sounds like.
I'm probably going to... Yeah, maybe slide over, push. I kind of like the 47, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No, I went... Sounds right. I lean over as well. I mean, it sounds like Oladipo is going to be back somewhat early in the year, like mid-November, possibly December. So I don't think we're talking about him being out to the All-Star break. If he is, I think they do go under. Yep. But otherwise, I think they're a better team now than they were last year.
Agreed.
So, I mean, I really like the Brogdon. Oh, and
Goga. Lane. Goga's there.
Yeah, and TJ McConnell, who's going to definitely win a game from them just by slapping the floor a bunch.
That is true. I actually forgot TJ's there.
Yeah.
Like, he's good. And he's one of those continuously underrated point guards.
Right. And in theory, I mean, maybe they'll get more minutes for Aaron Holiday as well.
That's true. And if, like, TJ actually wanted to take more threes,
right,
that would be great.
That would be. The defending champion Toronto Raptors are fifth in the East with an over-under of 46. Obviously, they lost Kawhi, lost Danny Green. They did sign Stanley Johnson, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. They've kept, you know, everyone else, basically. So, where you stand on the Raptors, sans Kawhi?
I think somewhere between 42 and 48. I think it's a pretty wide field.
Mm-hmm.
It really depends on Pascal Siakam. I'm very, very high on Siakam. I even wrote a piece on Forbes months ago about if Kawhi were to leave the Raptors, like, they would actually be in pretty good hands because of Siakam. And mm-hmm. I stand by that all the mm-hmm. way through. I think he's one of those guys who just changes games. And I think he does so repeatedly and consistently. He's not one of those guys who, like, wins you two games, looks great, and then goes on a, you know, seven-game slump or anything. Like, he's just continuously aggressive defensively, offensively, great passer. Doesn't really, you know, yeah, sometimes he forces shots, but I don't necessarily think that's a theme with him. I could see them finish. They're definitely in the playoffs as far as I'm concerned right now, when you look at the roster, like, what they have to work with. But, you know, 46, that could go either way for me. I'm not really, I mean, but I think there's probably a greater risk of going slightly below than, you know, a lot over.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this with the Thunder, how I wouldn't want to bet this line because I have no idea what they're going to do with the trade deadline.
Yeah, that's fair.
The Raptors, if they keep everyone together, I think they go over. But Kyle Lowry, Marc Gasol, and Serge Ibaka are all heading into the last year of their contracts.
Mm-hmm.
They're all going to be over the age of 30 once the season starts. I agree with you that the future of this team is Siakam and OG. Fred VanVleet as well, probably. And we, you know, they took these low-risk, high-upside flyers on Stanley Johnson, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Let's see if either of those guys pan out. That's great. They, you know, they can keep them beyond next season. But I lean toward thinking that Masai is going to probably at least trade one of Lowry, Gasol, or Ibaka. I just think there's going to be a buyer's market at the trade deadline this year because the free agent class sucks so much next summer that, you know, the title race is wide open this year. I think there's going to be 10-plus teams that talk themselves into being legitimate contenders. And we saw last year with Gasol. He was a major part of a championship-winning team. Like, he was... I don't think they get past Philly if they don't make the Marc Gasol trade. So I think, you know, there will be a team out there that talks themselves into, okay, if we add Lowry, Gasol, Ibaka, one of those guys, that gives us another step toward winning a title. So I lean under just because I think that they are going to make a move at the deadline and take a step back intentionally. But if they keep everyone together, I think I'm going the over here.
Let me throw you a curveball.
Okay.
So because Siakam, he's not earning a ton of money right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's still on his rookie deal, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. This is the last year. Contract year, Siakam.
It is, and he hasn't signed an extension, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So if that remains true, you know, one could be, like you just said, there could be a team out there thinking, oh, we just need that one last piece, and they offer up the damn draft pick farm for Siakam.
Mm.
Like, is that the way to go? Like, you cash in everything through Siakam. You get what you can for Lowry and Gasol, and if no, you know, big offers are there, you let them expire, and then you go into 2020 with, you know, armed to the teeth with draft picks and cap space.
I mean, it would depend on what you're getting for Siakam. I wouldn't go into this season thinking you need to trade him, though.
I think, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if the phone rings in February.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if there's a Godfather offer, he's not, like, untradeable. He's right. Really good. He's a borderline all-star, but is he LeBron James, Stephen Curry? No. You could absolutely trade him. It depends on if some team calls up and offers what the Clippers gave up for Paul George for Pascal Siakam, you pack his bags and you book him a one-way ticket out of Toronto, of course.
Mm.
It depends on what you get.
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking of a team, obviously not a contender by any stretch, but a team that just needs a guy like him. Like, he would be the one who could fix Phoenix, wouldn't he?
I was about to. I knew you were going to say Phoenix. Yeah, yeah. He would be a perfect fit there. But
yeah, you also at the same time don't want to see him go there in case you know the GOAT returns.
Right, right. Although Masai would have no problem ripping off James Jones. That would be candy from a baby. Okay, next on the list is the Brooklyn Nets at 44. It seems like Vegas is correctly assuming that Kevin Durant is going to miss the entire season.
Yeah.
Brooklyn went 42-40 last year, but this is an entirely new team. They got Kyrie. They got DeAndre Jordan. Garrett Temple. Caris LeVert is healthy. They also got Taurean Prince. You know, a lot of new faces in Brooklyn this time. Oh, David Nwaba, too. I forgot about him almost. Mm-hmm.
Jared Allen is still there and is apparently playing summer league.
Yep. Spencer Dinwiddie another year there. So they've got a deep team, but no KD. Where you lean on the Nets?
Probably over. Yeah. I think 44 is a little bit low. Either Vegas is just kind of hating on Kyrie, which in terms of leadership abilities, I get it. But that team is just so damn talented. And Caris LeVert, I mean, that's sleeping on Caris. I mean, he was so good last year. Give him a full season, and like, he's right there.
Yep.
Spencer Dinwiddie, just such a confident and consistent presence off the bench at both guard spots, really. Like, he's 6'6", and you can even play him at the 3 in a pinch. Like, the versatility in that crowd there, it's just mind-boggling. You have Jared Allen. I don't even know if he's going to come off the bench, but if Jared Allen's come out, I really hope he doesn't come off the bench. But if he comes off the bench, that's like that alone is a testament to their depth and just how insanely talented they are.
Right.
I feel this is low.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen a lot of analytics models are also low on the Nets.
Yeah.
So it seems like, I don't know, I'm probably missing something, but I'm with you. I think this is a way low line for them. I think they are a much better team than close to 500. It would not surprise me if they're a top four team in the East this year. Like, I get the, you're right. The Kyrie leadership concerns are there, but he also chose to go to the Nets.
Agreed. Like,
this wasn't, he didn't get traded there. No, this is his choice. He actively sought out going there. He's going to be surrounded by his friends and Durant and DeAndre Jordan.
So you're saying he's going to actually add 2 months before he gets pissy for no reason?
I hope so. You would think so, but
all right.
I mean, yeah, like LeVert, you picked him as your most improved player last year heading into the season, and he didn't get hurt. He would have won that award probably, or would have been right there. He and Siakam would have had the most the most engaging MIP race in recent memory. Like those
two... that would have been great, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And well, now LeVert can get it this year instead. but you know, he was a monster in the playoffs against Philly. Like, I really like this Nets team. I think the depth is nice and balanced. Kyrie is a top tier star, you know, their number one scorer, no questions there. I think their defense is going to be fine. If, you know, we'll see what how much effort DeAndre Jordan puts in, but you're right, they still have Jared Allen to come in, either start or come in behind him and clean up the mess. I like this team a lot. I think this is an easy over for me.
I wonder, though, because I too saw the whole analytics thing on Twitter, but I didn't read any articles about it, admittedly. I just haven't had the time. Do you think partly why the analytics show that the Nets might not be, you know, as good this year is because the Caris LeVert injury kind of skewed the numbers?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are based on projection, like projected output, and I just don't know how you're calculating that. Like, Torian Prince also had an underwhelming season last year, and I think,
right,
you know, maybe in this Kenny Atkinson system, he's better than he was last year. Like, he, after the All-Star break 2 years ago, he looked like a really good player on the rise. So, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just optimistically projecting improvement for LeVert, Prince, Dinwiddie, Allen in particular. I don't know. I think they're like a really good, like, 8 or 9 man rotation, and you've still got some interesting guys who could soak up a few minutes off the bench beyond that.
Mm. I agree. It's going to be interesting. I want to see if the analytics crowd gets it right, because, I mean, sometimes they are right on the money.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right, Miami Heat, 44 wins. They were 39-43 last year, but obviously added Jimmy Butler this summer. They got rid of Hassan Whiteside, which is probably addition by subtraction. Also picked up Myers Leonard.
I'm going to go slightly over because it's Jimmy Butler after all, and more minutes to Bam Adebayo is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm leaning the over as well. I mean, Olynyk suffered the knee injury during international play, but it sounds like he's going to be fine for the season. The only issue is they are completely capped out, like bumping up against the hard cap, I think within $1 million. So they are stuck. Like, if anyone goes down, they can't pick up people on the buyout market. They would have to swing a trade. They have some tradable contracts, but, you know, this is it for the Miami Heat. So we'll see if, you know, I agree with you. Jimmy Butler is going to be a nice fit there and is going to probably guide this team to 45 wins. But I don't know. It makes me nervous. This line just makes
sound.
Me nervous.
I agree with that sound all the way through. It's like, yeah. Yeah. Because they have, like, what, 2.5 great players, right? In that sense, they have Jimmy, they have Bam Adebayo, and then, you know, Goran Dragic, sort of. You could add just Winslow into that, but I'm
going to say, you're forgetting.
Yeah, no, I'm not forgetting him. I'm waiting for him to break out just a little bit more. Like, he's doing a lot of things,
yeah,
but just to assert himself a little bit more offensively, that would go a long way.
For sure. Yeah, I lean the under here. Just because they don't have, like, their floor is so low. If Jimmy gets hurt, their floor is so, so low that, you know, if I'm betting on probabilities, I think they're, you know, run a simulation of this season 10,000 times. And of course, there are going to be times where they win more than 44 games or times where they win 45 plus, 50 plus. But I think more often than not, they probably lose. You know, maybe they're just a 500 team. That's okay. Yeah.
That could happen. If Jimmy goes down, it should just be the Bam show for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Okay, next on the list, the Magic at 42.5. They were 42-40 last year, so this is basically Vegas saying, you treaded water this summer, we expect you to get no better or worse next year.
Yeah. This is difficult because, you know what? Aaron Gordon has been treading water. Like, yeah. He's been the same player for a couple of years now.
Yep.
I'm skeptical that Vucevic is going to replicate the same season again. I don't think he necessarily is. But then you look at Mo Bamba, who's lurking in the wings, and Jonathan Isaac, who's lurking in the wings. And I have to assume that both those guys take a significant step up in their respectively second and third year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably going to go the slight over because of that. But this team's just, they still need a point guard. Markelle Fultz right now is still a question mark. I don't think it's fair, like, bringing any sort of expectations in upon him.
Right.
That's just, like, we've learned our lesson by now. Like, let's not use him. Huh?
Have we?
Did you and I have.
Did you not see the reaction to those videos where he shot three jumpers on Twitter and everyone's like, oh my god, he's fixed?
I genuinely didn't. No, oh, really? When did that happen?
Yeah, it was like a week or two ago. There's a video of him. It was like him shooting jumpers, but, you know, I'm not like a professed shot doctor. I'm not going to pretend that I am. But the form still didn't look great to me. It looked just kind of hitchy and awkward. Maybe, I could be wrong. Like, he hit the shots, so I guess it's all that matters. It's they go in. But, yeah, people were like, oh, my God, he's fixed. He's going to be a superstar. It's like,
I mean, yeah. I hope they're right. I feel so bad for that kid. So,
yeah. I hope they're right, too. But you're right. I don't think you should put the expectation that come October 23rd or whenever their first game is, Markelle Fultz is going to be locked in 20-point-per-game scorer right away. I think they're going to ease him in.
Might not even play, right?
Who knows? Yeah, they still have not put a timetable on his return.
That's what I'm saying. So we don't know. I mean, no. But I will say this. If somehow Aaron Gordon can just kind of snap out of whatever's going on, because he's so much better than this. Like, for him to just be in a standstill the way he's been over the past 2 years, I want to say, or at least last year, to be fair, he could be an all-star in this league.
Yeah, if he played on a team that didn't have seven bigs next to him, totally.
Yeah, that's just such a major problem. I can't understand. Like, this is what, the third year in a row that we're going into this?
And now they added Al-Farouq Aminu this summer, too.
I mean, Jesus, Orlando, come on.
Yeah, like, they need a consolidation trade at some point.
They do. They really do. And the worst thing about it is, I mean, they could be fun. Like, they have the athleticism and the personnel to really be entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Detroit Pistons, 37.5. They were 41-41 last year.
So Vegas is counting on them getting worse because they signed Derek? Okay.
Correct. And Markieff Morris.
And Keith too. That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, superstars drive the league, and Blake Griffin was damn good.
Yeah.
Last season, and I have a hard time looking at Blake in what he's going to be. What, 30?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Somewhere around there.
Okay. I don't think he's going to regress at all. Mm-hmm. I think he's. You know, finding his rhythm. Andre Drummond is, what, 26?
Yep,
26. And still, yeah. So, I mean, those two guys are still the primary motives for that team. So, I have a hard time looking at those two and going, oh, they're not going to be as productive next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying over.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, how much faith did you put in their losses of Reggie Bullock and Wayne Ellington and Ish Smith?
Right, yeah.
And, like, Stanley Johnson. Oh, no. You know? It comes down to, can Reggie Jackson stay healthy, as always? Can Blake Griffin stay healthy? But they do have Derrick Rose, as you mentioned, who can at least soak up some backup point guard minutes. They picked up Svi at the trade deadline. They, you know, a nice combination there with him and Luke Kennard at two guard. Christian Wood, who I know you're gonna want to get minutes, and he's not going to, and it's going to frustrate you all season. I'm excited for that.
I'm so glad you didn't bring up my tweet.
I will leave that so you don't get roasted on Twitter.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, this one's tough. I mean, I kind of lean under just because...
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, if Blake goes down, this team is so screwed. And
yeah, but I just, you know, I get it, but I hate going the route of expecting it.
I know. But, like, he played 75 games last season. The previous 4 years, 58, 61, 35, 67.
No, I agree. It's a fair point. I really think that I think he deserves a year where we just kind of expect him to be healthy. I really hate that every year we're going in with the whole caveat of if Blake is healthy. He deserves better than that. Well, he was so good last year.
Yeah, he was great last year. And if he stays healthy, he's going to continue to be great. But, if I'm running a simulation 10,000 times, how many times does he play 70-plus games?
Not many. Not many. I'll give you that one. Yeah. But I'm going to be optimistic. And here's the thing. I want them to use Derrick Rose the right way as well. Like, if he's just, you know, getting all the deep perimeter shots that he wants. Like, here's the thing. People look at his three-point field goal percentage and go, oh, he's a better three-point shooter now. No, he was a better three-point shooter in November, and that's it.
Right, right.
If you isolate November and you ignore that, it becomes crabby real quick.
Yes.
So if you play Derek, it has to be with the mindset of get him to the basket, have him draw fouls, have him, you know, get layups, and just put a ton of pressure on the defense. And I could see a, like, maybe a small wrinkle where he just puts on the jets, collapses the defense, and drops the ball off to a Blake Griffin, like, running 100 miles an hour trying to dunk and murder everyone in sight. That would be fun.
That would be fun.
And also, Sekou Doumbouya is on that roster, so because of that, I'll be tuning in.
So you're going over on the Pistons?
I'm going over on the Pistons solely because I am optimistic about Blake's health.
Fair enough. I also don't think... Did we give our official picks on the Magic?
No, I just said slightly over.
Okay. I'm going under just to be contrarian.
That's fine.
Let's go to the Bulls. 33. They went 22-60 last year, so Vegas has high hopes for the your former, current, future Chicago Bulls.
Confusion is complete. Okay, so this is a fun line for you guys. I have no idea. Like, this Bulls team is so weird. Like, theoretically, in terms of talent, I think we can agree that the talent level is absolutely better than, you know, a 22 win team. You know, Wendell Carter only played 44 games. You know, Lauri Markkanen was out for the first month at least with the elbow, and when he came back, he didn't look right. And I saw him last summer, and he was a lot better. So he would have had a lot better season had he not had that elbow injury. Chris Dunn just really stunk up the joint, which was disappointing. But Zach LaVine, I think he's getting maligned a lot, and I wonder why. Because I get that his defense is crap, utter crap. But offensively, he actually turned in a very solid year, almost 24 points a game on, you know, above league average efficiency. Yeah, he got trigger happy once in a while, but when he wasn't flanked by Markkanen, like, who else was there to take shots? Denzel Valentine missed the entire season. I'm not really sure it's great that he's coming back, because the only thing he can do is really shoot. Not really high on him. But the Bulls have a weird mix of talent right now, because they got Tomas Satoransky, Thaddeus Young, Luke Kornet. Like, they got some pretty good pieces in. They drafted Kobe White, who's only 19, so it's going to take some time. But the ceiling of that team is certainly higher than 33. The question is, can they put those pieces together and actually play cohesive ball for a season?
Right.
If they can't, this goes under 33 real quick. And they have a pretty rough stretch late in the season. I'll be writing about that on Forbes, actually. So, I mean, this could go either way. And it's weird to say, because Vegas, as you alluded to, they bumped them up by 11 games. Yep. So under normal circumstances, we should be sitting here going, oh, well, that's probably an under. This could go both ways. I mean, because their talent is so weird. It's hands down the weirdest team in the NBA.
I don't know if that's true.
When it comes to the level of talent and in terms of what it produces, I think it does.
Well, I mean, last year, they, like, Otto Porter changed the trajectory of this team last year. Having a healthy Markkanen and Carter, at least going into the season, and having a Tomas Satoransky, a.k.a. not Chris Dunn. Like, I get why Vegas bumped him up to this extent. So I actually lean the over here. I think...
I could see that.
They were basically a 500 team during Porter's 15 healthy games. Super small sample size, but, you know, I think they have a nice starting lineup with LaVine. Markkanen will be their two primary scorers. Carter Jr. is very good defensively, was great defensively as a rookie. He's only going to be better this year. Porter's a nice glue guy. Satoransky's not going to do too much. He fits that team well. You have Thaddeus Young coming off the bench. I really like Luke Kornet, too. That was a sneaky, nice pickup for them. I think they actually have some decent depth here. This means betting on Jim Boylan, which makes me not feel great, and I would not advise anyone to put actual money betting on Jim Boylan. If anything, bet against him. But, yeah, I mean, like, in terms of just pure raw talent, they are better than a 33-win team.
I think the key for them is unleashing Wendell Carter Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they have him just posting up near the basket again, trying to score, this goes to hell in a handbasket real quick.
Yeah.
That was the worst, you know, the worst way to utilize that player that I've ever seen. Like, that was horrendous. This is a guy who needs to do like a ton of triple handoff action and you know, stay at the elbows to both pass and shoot, because he's got a nice looking jump shot. He can hit it. He can even hit threes. Like, this dude is a guy who could be on his way to becoming the next Al Horford. So putting him in post-ups, that's just the worst way to utilize him. So that needs to go away immediately.
That's how bigs did it in the 80s, Mort.
Yeah, that is very much true. And so here's the thing when it comes down to it, because you just brought up something really interesting. Like, let's say the talent on this team delivers in the sense, if you look at it in isolation, like Otto Porter has a good season, Zach LaVine has a good season, but they have it under their own terms, meaning that if Jim Boylan insists on pulling some weird stuff all the time, and they lose because of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to say that then he would be the sole reason for them not living up to expectations. Like, this roster is intriguing. Like, I think even though he hasn't been a head coach for a full season yet, I'm putting all the blame on him if it goes south.
I mean, I don't think you should ever put all the blame or all of the
credit on this coach. I am, because what he did over the first couple of weeks, honestly, just not only in the way what they did on the floor,
yeah,
by giving Robin Lopez 25 post-ups a game was just asinine.
No, I know. But, I mean, he would get, you know, a good part of the blame for sure.
The team almost had a mutiny the first week after he got hired?
Yeah, but then they started to defend him by the end of the year. They all took after Scoutman.
That's not a good thing.
That's probably true. All right. Atlanta Hawks also at 33 wins. They went 29-53 last year. Added DeAndre Hunter this summer. Cam Reddish. Jabari Parker. Bruno Fernando. Picked up Alan Crabb. Evan Turner. Chandler Parsons.
I desperately want to say the over,
mm-hmm.
but I think they brought in so much youth that, you know, they're not going to be as much minutes to, like, vets. Like, is there any reason whatsoever they should play Evan Turner?
I think he's going to be their backup point guard.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who else do they have? It's like their only option is a backup point guard.
That's true. But I'm looking at that team. It's so young. But at the same time, Trey's so good already. Yeah. John Collins so good already. I mean, Alex Len's still there. Yeah. I mean, something would have to go wrong. But I'm looking at the development minutes, because DeAndre Hunter, not an NBA minute to his name. Same with Cam Reddish. Like, it's so young. But Kevin Herter then, second year, looked really good in his first year. Surprised everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, screw it. Over.
Yep, I'm taking the over too, and it is 100% just a bet on Trae Young.
Yep.
He struggled early in his rookie season, came on strong late, at least offensively. We won't talk about the defense. He's going to take a big leap in his second year. John Collins is still so young and is already putting up almost 20-10 every game. I mean, things could go wrong, and, you know, who knows? Maybe Cam Reddish goes hero ball all the time, but they're also playing in a division against the Hornets and the Wizards, so that should be, in theory, 8 very easy wins. So now they only need 25 more, and they're the over already.
Yeah, you're right.
So, yeah, I lean over for them. And since we just mentioned the Wizards, 28.5 for the Washington Wizards, who will be without John Wall presumably all of the year as he recovers from the torn Achilles. They do still have Bradley Beal, of course. They got Ish Smith this summer. They got Isaiah Thomas this summer. They got Rui Hachimura, the next Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Oh, come on. Did you just steal my joke? You just stole my joke. Okay.
Sure did. Davis Bertans. Like they got some talent in this summer, but I'm pounding the under here.
Yeah, I am too. But at the same time, I also feel that that's extremely disrespectful to Bradley Beal, who is a legitimate superstar. I have such a hard time seeing how he could allow the team to lose under 30 games.
The only reason I'm pounding the under is because I'm praying to God that the Wizards wake up and trade him by the trade deadline, because otherwise we're going to have another Anthony Davis trade saga on our hands with Bradley Beal, and I don't want to see sentiment turn against Bradley Beal like it did with Anthony Davis.
That's fair. So you're pounding the under because you think they will wise up and trade him.
I hope so, for their sake.
Yeah.
They need to. They absolutely, he is not going to re-sign there in 2021. He has no reason.
Oh, for
to,
sure.
Right?
For
so,
sure.
Like, just get it over with.
But if they don't, are you still pounding the under?
Yeah, I mean, look at that roster, man.
Yeah, no, I agree that they're probably going to be the under, but I'm just not pounding it, like you said, because it's Bradley Beal, man. Like, 26, 5, and 5.
Yeah. But look at the rest of that
roster. He's a super stud.
I know.
I mean, Bradley Beal and Giannis Antetokounmpo, come on.
Right, like, who is the second best player on the Wizards right now?
Thomas Bryant.
Right. Is that team winning more than 26 games?
I mean, Thomas Bryant is only going to get better, and he was damn good last year.
That didn't answer the question, right?
No, I'm trying to stall. You're right.
Take the under on the Wizards.
Yeah, I think so, too.
The Knicks are also at 28.5, despite accumulating every power forward in the league.
Can we pound the under on that one as well, then?
Yes. I am very much pounding the under on the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, again, this is part of it is a trade deadline bet. I don't think they signed all these guys to these, you know, 1+1 or, like, two-year deals with a non-guarantee or, like, a slight guarantee in the second year. I don't think that's an accident. They signed a lot of these vets to trade them. I don't think there are enough minutes to go around to keep everyone happy, at least in the first couple months of the season.
Are you telling me that signing all power forwards is not a great way to free up minutes?
Right, especially when two of your young prospects should also be getting minutes at the three of the four? No, wasn't the best strategy. So I think it's going to set a very... There's just going to be no sense of camaraderie on this team, I don't think. Because they all just know they're basically mercenaries. Like, all the vets, except for Julius Randle, know they're mercenaries.
Yeah.
So they're just going to be like, I need to get my minutes. I need to get my shots up. I need to, like, stuff stats to get my next contract. F this team. I don't care about if we win or lose. Just, like, this is about me.
I think Wasserman brought up a similar point when he was guest here on the pod, right? Yeah. I think that's a very accurate way of looking at it, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, fleshed out the game of RJ Barrett, who is a very shot-heavy player.
Yep.
Like, combine that with Julius Randle and Bobby Portis, already there, those three, like, each of them are looking at a minimum of 15 shots a game. They're not going to get that.
Nope. Yeah, this next team is going to be very bad.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. Speaking of very bad, the Cleveland Cavaliers, 24 wins. They went 19-63 last year, although Kevin Love missed a grand majority of the season.
I mean, again, this all hinges on them training Love, right?
I mean, for sure.
Because a fully healthy Kevin Love for 82 games, that probably takes... Then I'll probably take the over.
Mm-hmm.
No Kevin Love whatsoever. We're looking at 15 games.
Right.
And if it's somewhere in the middle, if you trade it at the deadline, I really don't know. I'm taking the under just because I don't have confidence in them whatsoever at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think they try to trade Love at the deadline as well. I don't think... It sounds like, based on all the reporting, that they're going to go into the season with him, in part because, you know, there's just so many restrictions on trading guys who signed this summer until December 15th, so there's just limited options until then. Also, because he missed so much time, and because he's entering the first year of this four-year, $120 million extension, he needs time to rebuild his trade value. Like, you know, Sam Vecenie of The Athletic reported earlier this year, he talked to five NBA execs, and he asked, do you think the Cavs can get a positive return on Kevin Love? And all five said no. Like, I don't think the Cavs want to get worse by, you know, at least like in terms of their long-term upside, get worse by trading Kevin Love. They're not trying to just dump his contract. They want to get him to a point where teams are giving up something. And I think it was Chris Fedor of Cleveland.com who reported they wanted picks and young prospects, not one or the other, both. Do they get there? I don't know, but it's the same thing with what we talked about with the Raptors earlier, where if you get to the trade deadline and there's some team looking at, okay, we need a stretch four. We think Kevin Love could be the difference between us making the first or the second round of the playoffs and winning a championship. Maybe they do give up something of significant value to get him. So if I had to bet, I would not bet on Kevin Love being a member of the Cleveland Cavaliers at the end of this season, or at least, you know, hopefully they can find something of value to let him play on a contender. Like, he's 31, I believe. Like, he don't make him play out the rest of his prime on a team that's going to be lucky to win 25 games. And then, yeah, like, otherwise you're betting on Darius Garland and Colin Sexton, both of whom I think are going to be good players, but they're just so young, and young point guards especially tend to struggle a lot. So that combination might hold the Cavs back. So yeah, I lean the under here for them as well.
Yeah. I mean, the plus side is, as Zach Lowe alluded to, I think a couple months back, you know, Love doesn't have a contract where it dips into like the late 30s. It's right. It hovers around like 29, 30, 31, I think, something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's manageable. Yeah. It's not a huge albatross that's going to handicap you like for the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
That would definitely make him, I think, more of it, not more available, but in terms more attainable, and teams would be more open-minded to him, I think.
Yeah.
Pending it makes sense.
Right. I would think so as well. And the last on the list are the Charlotte Hornets at 23.
Under?
Yep. I was shocked. 23 seems very high for them.
Yeah, it's rough. It's really, really tough being a Hornets fan these days, I think. You really have very few assets moving forward. Like, Malik Monk has not come on the scene in the way that you thought. Hopefully for their sake, like, year three is where he steps up and like he makes us forget everything about the first two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Miles Bridges is a positive asset, I think. Like, yeah. He's really good. And then you go from there. Like, PJ Washington is, let me just say, he doesn't really get my Marvin Gaye on whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
And then you're looking at, what? I mean, Terry Rozier.
Is he a positive asset right now? Hell no.
No. But I mean, in terms of like the young core.
Oh, God. I mean, Cody Zeller, I guess.
I mean, this is just one of the worst. This is one of the worst long-term cap sheets going back a couple of years that I've seen ever.
I mean, I just think this is the worst team in the NBA.
Yeah.
I don't think there's
Them and Cleveland, depending on what happens with Love, right?
I think Cleveland is still better.
Oh, even without Love? Interesting.
I think yeah. So. I have no faith in this team. Like, Terry Rozier has yet to shoot 40% from the field in four seasons. And he's going to be starting on a team that barely has NBA talent. Like, this team sucks. Let's just be very blunt about it. They have, yeah, sure, maybe Malik Monk gets better, but losing Kemba Walker and Jeremy Lamb, they lost their two best players. Nick Batum has been a shell of himself for a couple of years now. And I just think a lot of these vets in particular, Batum most notably, might just go into play, you know, go through the motions mode. Like, are they really going to go all out for a team that they know? Like, he's signed for two more seasons, I believe. I think he's got one more year and then a player option that he's very clearly going to pick up because no one's giving him $27 million next summer.
Right. Right.
You know, I just can't see anyone putting forth their best effort on a team that's going to get clobbered by 30 most nights.
Is this the best sneak tank team? in the NBA.
I guess, in terms
of Terry Rozier signing, that's what right. I'm alluding to, obviously.
Right. I mean, I guess technically, like, they aren't accepting that they're tanking, but yes. And with that in mind, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would be very surprised if this team won 24 or more games.
Could you see a scenario wherein Terry Rozier just becomes a world beater and, you know, 89% of NBA Twitter looks dumb?
I mean, it happened 2 years ago in the playoffs, but he was also playing alongside a lot more talent. I just think he's going to be a chucker in Charlotte. I think he's going to put up numbers, but I don't think he's going to be efficient. And I just think their offense is going to be so bad. Who else do they have for a dependable source of offense?
Yeah, none. I mean, theoretically, it would be Nick Batum, but like he hasn't been a scorer for years. So, I just want to, you know, wrap it up with the Hornets here. So I interviewed Bismack Biyombo for a Forbes feature that'll be coming up eventually. I just had to transcribe everything and set it up. And I talked to him briefly about Michael Jordan in terms of his role, and he said something interesting. He said that Mike, when he was sitting on the bench with Mike, Mike would just kind of call out everything, and he would be right. Like, he would just point, this is going to happen, and the yada, yada, yada. Everything was just, like, fall into place exactly as Mike said.
Mm-hmm.
And that had me thinking about Terry Rozier immediately. Like, maybe being able to sit next to Mike here and there and just pick his brains. Because, like, let's agree right off the bat, Terry Rozier's talent is not bad. Like, right. He has the athletic foundation. He's got, you know, some really nice herky-jerky moves. He can get to the basket. Like, there's a lot to like in terms of the physical package and his playing style. It's just the lack of inefficiency, the lack of basketball IQ.
Mm-hmm.
But if Mike can just dial it up a little bit, if something clicks there, that could be interesting. It's because we've spent so much time crabbing on that contract that when Biyombo mentioned this to me, I was like, that is interesting.
Yeah.
That is one wrinkle that I would at least think about.
Yeah, I hope, for their sake, because otherwise they just paid $20 million a year to a guy who's going to shoot 38%.
Yeah, yeah. Something is definitely, I hope for their sake, they really look at it as a genuine investment.
Right.
And you know, they have Mike on board all the way through. Like, okay, let me turn you into a proper ball player.
Right, right.
Yeah. Not unlike, do you promise to get better if we sign you for
right,
100?
Right, which is never. Let's ask the Timberwolves how that worked out. Well, that's a good place to wrap up. So thank you, everyone, to tuning in. As always, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker. So check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man.